Femi Kuti, and you are listening to NYC Radio Live.
Hey folks, how are you? Good, I hope. David Ellenbogen here. I just got news that the great Huma Sakela passed away, and I wanted to share this interview. It's from 2013, 4 years and change ago. I just ended up backstage at one of his shows, although I met him very briefly once in Ghana, 1999, where he was walking around the campus of the University of Legon, kind of like a king. I mean, there was such reverence around this guy, and I think I shook his hand. But anyway, in 2013, I ended up backstage, and we had a pretty intense discussion that I think about a lot. It's really hard to comprehend from today's perspective, you know, what the struggles were like from someone of his generation in apartheid South Africa. And it's really lucky to have his perspective in his own words. And the other thing that was just unbelievable is how refined and perfect he was as a musician, with vocals, on trumpet, with arrangements, as a performer. I mean, he was a master, and he had to be. He had to be in the same way that Miriam Makeba had to be, and the same way that Harry Belafonte had to be, in order to reach a wider audience and get some truth out there. So, thanks for listening. I did get the interview transcribed. Maybe I'll do something with that quickly. But yeah, thanks for listening. Enjoy this conversation. It is, was backstage. It was not in an airtight NPR studio, but I think hopefully you'll find find it worth it. Find that the charm is that this is a kind of underground podcast. Maybe pulled a little less punches than he might have with a major journalist or something like that. So here's a conversation with the late, great Hugh Masekela.
I know that you and Abdul Ibrahim, Gudu Pakwana, all this played a big role in the movement against apartheid, in the successful movement. So if you could talk a little bit about what role the music played with all that.
No, I think it was just a coincidence. You know, we came from a country that was at war for over 350 years until 1994, mm-hmm. from 1652. So, you know, we're about maybe like the 200th generation that was fighting our occupation. And we grew up, all of us, grew up in demonstrations and boycotts and rallies and massacres. you know, and raids and the fighting police and beating the system. We all grew up with it. The fact that we were musicians was just a coincidence. Mm-hmm. And it would have been strange for us to all of a sudden pretend like we didn't know about what was happening in South Africa when we were direct recipients of South African music.
Some people think that the music itself played a role in the shift. Do you feel that way, or is it just the timing?
No, I mean, like, Miriam Makeba in 1963 captured, by then she had captured the imagination of the world, but she actually addressed the United Nations because of her career, because she'd been working also with Belafonte, but she was a visible person. She was banned for the third time by the South African government for addressing the United Nations National Assembly, General Assembly. And that was the first time the world really found out about what was happening in South Africa. But we lost South Africa originally because before we attacked, we sang. So music has always been, you know, like a disadvantage to us. But paradoxically, we're the only society that had music as a major catalyst towards our freedom. But the people who faced the tanks and the machine guns, you know, they always sang as they, you know, as they were approaching those. And it used to terrify the apartheid soldiers and police when they heard that sound. But we have thousands of protest songs and war cries from way back. It was part of our culture. And there's nothing that ever happened in South Africa when I was a kid that where there was no music. Music was our literature and our language, you know. So it's not like when you talk about me or maybe Miriam Makeba was special, but we were carried away with the current, you know. But there was millions of other people who were doing the same thing, or even more, who lost their lives. I mean, the real heroes of South Africa's freedom are the people who faced those guns, who threw stones, who, like, sang against tanks and machine guns, you know. And but when you look at 350 years, you can imagine how many people lost their lives trying to liberate our country. So I don't like to be made to feel like a special part of it, because there are people whose names we'll never know, without whom we wouldn't be free today.
And early on, you know, I think you as well as Miriam Makeba really got the word out about what was really going on. I wonder who, has now that things have changed somewhat, what's the message that you're trying to bring out now?
I never had a message then. We're just part of, like, listen, we grew up and were raised to stand against injustice. Mm-hmm. And the message of fighting injustice is not a message for now, you know. And it's incumbent upon everybody in the world to object to injustice. Mm-hmm. It's not the role of any. It's not a special role of any people.
But not everybody does it.
Yeah, well, because they're passing the buck.
Right. Yeah. But you're not. You feel responsibility.
No, I'm a direct product of South Africa.
Right.
I'm a direct product of South Africa, and my resource and my source is the people of South Africa. So at the time that they were oppressed, you know what I mean, there was no way I could be. If I tried to say, well, I don't have anything to do with this, whatever is happening, I would have self-destructed.
Right. So you're part of a greater current. All right, the last thing I just wanted to ask you about is, I know that your fate and Nelson Mandela's fate have been intertwined a little bit. And I've read people who say the theory that one person can't change history. But I wonder if you feel like he's someone who actually did.
No, Nelson Mandela was part of a movement And he was made the spokesman and the symbol of it. But he didn't think up whatever he talked about or what he did. He was just chosen to be the one to represent. I mean, you know, he was mentored by Walter Sisulu. And then there were people like Albert Luthuli, who was the first one, the first African to get a Nobel Peace Prize, way back when he was banished, you know. And there's many other people. There was Shaka Zulu, there was Hintsa, there was Nxeka, there was Makana, there was Skukuni, there was... You know, we've had warriors from centuries. And they were always, like, delegated by the rest of the people. So, I mean, there's no way one person nobody can do anything without people.
Right. Well, then you're agreeing with the theory. It's Tolstoy who has it. The Russian writer Tolstoy, that's his theory. But when he left prison, I mean, he came out with a message of reconciliation. Do you think if he didn't have that message, maybe things would
have been
different? What I'm
saying is that it wasn't his message. It was the message of the movement that he belongs to. And he was the spokesperson. And he was chosen to be the spokesperson because he'd always been a very good speaker and orator on their behalf. And his name had been made a symbol of the struggle, you know. So that he became like deified overseas and became bigger than the people.
Right.
The same thing happened when Gandhi became bigger than India. You know, between the media and fans, a person can become what they didn't plan to be.
Yeah.
You know, so.
All right. Well, I guess the message that I'm learning from your thing is that we're all part of something much greater.
Yeah, well, I mean, if you think you're standing apart, that you're not, responsible for anybody's getting a chance, to like throw off their shackles, then you're really lost, because the majority of the human population in this world are poor people.
Right.
You know, and they treat it like shit all over the world. And there's people who think that it's not their, it's not their business. I mean, you take sports people. Sports people are actually brainwashed that they shouldn't even open their mouths. As if like politics does not affect sports. And of course they close their mouths because the sponsorships and the salaries are very high in those areas, and they are very influential, so it's almost like they paid to shut up.
And you feel like you took a blow in your careers at times for speaking?
I never had a career. I had an obsession with music. And my obsession with it, and maybe a little gift that I had, threw me into the arena. But my aim, even when I came overseas, was to learn and to study. And everything else is a coincidence. But I didn't plan to be, I didn't plan to, like, make it for myself. If you look at anybody that is out there to make it for themselves, they always self-destruct. They become very big and then they self-destruct. As long as you've got the me thing in your head, you're doomed.
Well, it is clear that you haven't stopped doing your homework. Because
I don't have to do homework, man. Where I come from suffering. It would be a joke if I tried to be anything else. I come from a nation that, is like politically free, but economically... they're still in the same situation. Because there's never been a time when people have said, listen, we're so sorry that we made so much money off slaving you and off your backs and we took your country. And to show you how sorry we are, here's $500 trillion to show you. That never has happened. In fact, the privileged and the establishment, when there's change, they protect their shit much more. And you will never find anybody in Germany after like World War II. You could never find anybody who sided with Nazism. Mm-hmm. You know, and when many countries became free in Eastern Europe, you couldn't find anybody who was on the side of communism. You know, when things changed in South Africa, and we had African sellouts, very many, millions of African sellouts, but when we became free, you couldn't find anybody who backed apartheid. You know what I mean? That's human nature. You know, if you went to the South after the civil rights won, you would never found anybody who was into like, me? Ku Klux Klan, you gotta be crazy. You know, that's how people are. So I think that what you have to understand is that people have always behaved badly. If you look at the history of the human species, mm-hmm. you know, not only are we the parasites of the world, but we've always behaved badly towards each other and treated each other like shit. For millions of years. So it's in our nature. In fact, it's very weird when you're a good person. If you're a hardworking community worker, you know, you're not out there to like make it, then people think you're weird. And it depends on like who's in charge. You know, you can be called a communist if they're against communists, or you can become a fascist if you're, you know. But the human species, we are very, very complex, and we're a selfish species. And we make war, you know, we make war, we fight each other over like artificial borders that we have invented for ourselves. Humans, we're crazy, completely out of it.
Stop the world, I want to get off. Thank you for your time, and okay. Thanks for what you do.
Thank you.